This is episode 137 of Social Entrepreneur with Misan Rawane of Wave.
And in West Africa, we're talking about 40 to 50 million unemployed young people who have a good 40 to 50 years of meaningful life left in them.
Welcome to the Social Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former business executive with Fortune 500 companies. Today, I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, we bring you exciting stories from the world of social entrepreneurs, benefit corporations, and impact investing. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to episode 137 of Social Entrepreneur with Misan Rawane of Wave. I think you're going to enjoy hanging out with Misan today. She's just one of those cool people that you just want to hang with. But I suspect that if you were just trying to hang around with her, she might hand you a laptop and say, hey, get to work. Because she's really passionate. She's really driven. I love her story. She knows that in Nigeria, where she lives, there's about 10 million unemployed young people. And across West Africa, it's more like 40 to 50 million unemployed young people. So she comes from a background where she had opportunities. She received a 7-Up bottling company scholarship to pursue her MBA. She's had some opportunities that she sees other people haven't had. But what she notices is that the education system in Nigeria is not preparing young people for employment. And at the same time, employers are circulating job postings desperately seeking qualified applicants. So there are all these unemployed youth and there are all these empty jobs. So there's a gap in between. So that's what she and her founding team and Wave, that's what they've set out to solve. So what Wave does is they train unemployed youth and they place them in entry-level jobs in high-growth industry. And they teach them things like employability skills such as communication, teamwork, problem-solving, time management, customer relations, and on and on and on. I found this interesting. They hold their classes from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and the classes are stand-up. There are no chairs. So they're trying to simulate the kinds of jobs that they're preparing people to take on in the industry. So here she is, Misan Rawane of Wave.
Wave is an organization that's passionate about unleashing the full potential of young people. And we do this by teaching young people the skills that they need to get that first job and take those steps down the path towards building a successful career and a meaningful life. We do this by training them, preparing them in these skills, and then connecting them to entry-level jobs that increase their income and put them on the path to social mobility.
How big of a problem is this? So you're primarily working in this area of youth unemployment. How big of a problem is youth unemployment?
So our focus is West Africa. WAVE actually stands for West Africa Vocational Education, but we've simply for a long time just gone by WAVE. And in West Africa, we're talking about 40 to 50 million unemployed young people who have a good 40 to 50 years of meaningful life left in them, yet they are blocked out of economic opportunity because they don't have the skills that employers are looking for and even the skills to set up their own businesses. They don't have the academic qualifications that usually the formal economy is using as a first screener. They don't have the work experience that a lot of employers demand, and they don't have the personal networks to get a leg in the door. So we're talking about the more vulnerable young people who will not get access to a college degree. And so, yeah, that's about the side. You know, in Nigeria where we operate, the problem is anything from 10 to 20 million unemployed young people between the ages of 18 and 35.
If I'm an unemployed young person and I can't find a job, what do I do?
You're hustling. You're on the streets. You're selling black market fuel if you can lay your hand on it. You're gambling, you're into crime, you're doing something to make ends meet. You're begging, you're sitting waiting for handouts with the local politician. when election season comes around, you're just hustling to survive. So when folks usually ask in Lagos, you know, say we're hustling and smiling, you know, we're just getting on with it. But they are blocked out of the formal economy. They're not getting any skills. They're not getting any work experience. And they continue to get more unemployable with every passing year.
And the school system is not preparing them for this then?
No. So our school system, and this is a global problem, our school system is now focused on credentials, just get you the qualifications. And they're not really focused on skills. And remember, the skills we're talking about that make someone work ready, these are skills that you can learn even outside of the four walls of a classroom. So it's how do you communicate effectively? How do you problem solve? How do you manage yourself and manage others? How do you manage time? How do you think creatively? How do you take initiative? How do you adapt, adaptive learning? How do you work well with others, teamwork? And so these are skills that we strongly advocate can be taught inside and outside of the classroom. But everyone's just focused on academic qualifications and credentials. And employers keep doing this because it's the easiest thing to vet. You know, someone comes and says, I've got a college degree. You kind of at least know, okay, let's invite them in for an interview. We're expecting that that's a proxy that says they must have discipline, they must have commitment, they must know how to communicate, they must know how to work well with others. But that isn't always the case. And it's blocking out 90% of the African population who doesn't have access to a college degree.
So what's your solution? How do you fix that?
So over the last 3 years, we have been finding hardworking, talented, motivated young people who do not have access to these four big barriers. They don't have the qualifications, they don't have the skills, they don't have the work experience, they don't have the networks. We then train them in our program, 150 hours intensive training in these essential work readiness skills. So as I mentioned, it's communication, problem solving, time management, managing expectations, teamwork, selling, core values, just how do you live life in a more effective way. So they call them soft skills, but they're hardest things to teach. And they're actually more of life skills. So we run them through our program, and then we connect them to entry-level jobs. Because at the end of the day, when a young person comes to you, they don't care about skills. They just care about income. Where is my next meal coming from? And so for us, it was always important that this had to be linked to jobs and to an income. So we then connect them to these entry-level jobs, which, you know, on average are paying, you know, double minimum wage, which is it's really still a hard time for young people because our minimum wage is not a living wage out here in Nigeria. A lot of them are just sort of sitting helplessly at home, being victims of a broken system. The education system has failed them. The employment system has failed them, and they are stuck in a rut.
Who pays for that? I mean, do they pay to come to your school?
So we do not charge an upfront fee. We only charge a placement fee after they've gotten a job. We charge both the employer and the job seeker. We used to have an upfront fee, but we did find that 80 to 90% of our job seekers couldn't afford that fee. And for them, the transportation cost of coming to the academy every day is a real cost for them. And so we've then deferred the payment for the training and made it a post payment. And it means that we're fully aligned because a lot of them will ask you hesitant and skeptical, oh, am I guaranteed a job at the end of this? And we say, we can't guarantee you a job. We can't go into an interview on your behalf. But we don't get paid until you get placed. So it is in our best interest to make sure that everyone walks out of here with a job within two to three months.
I'm wondering, how many applicants do you get and how many do you accept?
Our admissions rate is about 30%. So we admit about 30% of eligible applicants. Since we started in 2013, we've trained just over 800 young people. We've connected just under 600 of them to entry-level jobs. This year alone, we've trained about 400 people, and we're looking to get to 1,000 before the end of the year. And so our job placement rate is about 70% of them within 6 to 8 weeks. The rest of it is a rolling percentage. So some folks will take a bit longer than the 6 to 8 weeks to get a job. Some will go back into education, some will go into self-employment, and others we continue to work with them until we're able to get everyone who seeks a job from us a job.
So you have this group that's coming in and applying, and you're accepting about 30% of those who apply. How do you screen?
So we've actually been in the process. So over the last 3 years, essentially, we've been developing an admissions rubric where we're screening for self-motivation, for a willingness to learn, for flexibility and adaptability, and for people who don't give us a reason to question their integrity during the interview. So for us, we can't label you and say stamp of approval, you definitely have integrity. But once you give us a reason to question your integrity, maybe lying about your age or lying about your circumstances and not owning up for it, then we usually will not accept you into the program. But what we have found is that 40 to 50% of the poor fit candidates that are eliminated from the process are actually folks who are opting out, because we're very transparent about how intensive this program is. So folks will come in through an info session and maybe only 30% of the people will actually apply. Like, wait, you mean I have to go through this Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.? Our classes are standing up, because a lot of the jobs we're getting for the young people are in the service industry. So retail, hospitality, and you're on your feet the whole time. And so we found that simulating that behavior actually, it does help to build that muscle in them. And some of these young people will say, actually, you know what, this is way too much work. Like, I can do a bit better by just sitting at home and faffing around or begging or getting handouts from the local politician who's hustling on the street. Mm-hmm. And that investment in starting small and taking that first step actually is something that some people feel, you know what, I don't think I want to go through this. You know, we've been experimenting with that in recent times, saying, you know, we are spending on average, you know, half an hour to 45 minutes interviewing each candidate one-on-one to really get a sense of what their previous experiences have been in terms of how they've dealt with difficult challenges and resilience, and, you know, not the kind of formal skills that we will teach them, but really asking about what's driving them, what keeps this person waking up every morning and going through a really tough life and keep going. But we're finding that you can sort of vet that by just really showing people what a difficult program this is and seeing how many people are willing to stick it out. Yeah. And so even our graduation rate, we have about a 75% graduation rate, because some folks in the middle of the program will just drop out. It's too intensive for them.
Are you familiar with this term that's becoming so popular, grit?
So it's interesting that you ask about the term grit. We have heard about it and I have the book called Grit. It's here in our library. I'm actually staring at it, by Angela Duckworth. But yes, that is one thing that we, you know, it is a great word that defines what it is that we're looking for and what makes our trainees succeed. So we're actually in the middle of a study with the folks out in UPenn who are designing this concept of grit, and how do you measure it and how do you grow grit in young people? We're looking forward to seeing what the results of that is. But essentially, our students are going through these exercises where they are trying to develop their grit during the program. And it's quite some interesting stuff.
Are you completely funded then by the placement fees?
No. So, primarily, I think last year, our fees covered about 10% of our actual expenses. This year, we're targeting that it covers 30%. Our academies, we have four academies right now, and the first one, which is the oldest one, has been running for about 2.5 years. That is getting closer to financial sustainability, just from having scaled up in size. So we're able to run a training cycle every month, essentially 11 times in the year, and each class has the capacity to fit about 50 people. Right now, Academy 1 is running at about 40 people every month, and so as you get to full capacity, your overheads are the same, and starts to get closer to financial sustainability. And so that's what we're prioritizing over the next year, is to really see what are the most efficient ways to deliver our training and our placement services so that it actually ends up being financially sustainable from the fees. And even if the central administrative costs will always need to be covered by philanthropy, at least the academies on their own can be financially sustainable.
Ms. Sun, I'm wondering, how did you come about this work? I mean, what was your path that led you here?
One of the things that drew me and the fellow business school classmates who worked on this project for about a year in our second year of business school was that we are the counterfactual to the story that we are telling. We're young West Africans who, by accident of birth and circumstances and opportunity, were able to get access to some of the best education in the world. So we were at Harvard Business School. I was there on a scholarship sponsored by the 7-Up bottling company here in Nigeria. And just being able to see that it really was a ticking time bomb if we didn't address this issue of the tens of millions. I mean, every year in Africa, 11 million young people are joining the labor force, and they're unemployable and they're unemployed. And that level of frustration and a loss of dignity is just something that we could relate to because we were the counterfactual, because you have friends and others who were left behind and didn't get access. Same opportunities, and you have seen their trajectory end up very differently. So that's sort of the driving inspiration and passion behind this, is to fix the education employment system so that everyone gets access to similar opportunities to make something of themselves, to put themselves on the path to having a better life than their parents had. And, you know, right before business school, I had been working in Nigeria, and on any given day, I was coming across job seekers who were looking for jobs but didn't have the right skills. And then on the other side, I was meeting with employers, even friends of mine who were then, you know, growing into seniorship in their organizations and were trying to recruit people to join their teams. And every day I would get a job description that, hey, I can't find a team. I can't find someone to join my team. Do you know anyone? Please circulate this in your circles. I still had one of those conversations this morning with an employer. Oh, I can't find someone to join my team. I'm looking for this kind of person. But on the other hand, I was getting lots of interactions with young people who were looking for jobs. So realizing that the skills gap was critical. In the public policy think tank that I was working in at the time, we were struggling to find research analysts. We were looking at university graduates, and they just didn't have the skills that were required to be entry-level research analysts and just do basic data mining and analysis and write these papers. So the education system is broken, and everyone who lives in this part of the world, and I think this is similar in terms of the conversations I have with folks out in Asia and Latin America as well, you're getting young people who are coming out of these what we call factories of failure. You've delivered a product to the world, to the employment market, that is defective. And we have to reshift the conversation, rewire the entire system so that it starts to focus on skills that people have rather than what schooling they've had. I mean, high schools, secondary schools need to become the places where these skills are taught, not just literacy and numeracy, but problem-solving skills, teamwork, communication skills. The rest of it, employers are more than happy to train for the technical skills. That stuff is standardized. Employers have the best, equipment, cutting edge technology, the way of working to train on the technical skills. What they struggle with is finding people who have the right attitude and the soft skills. And that's where we saw the gap, and that's where we saw the opportunity, and that's how we developed this model for WAVE.
So you came out of a university setting where you were thinking about starting a business, and now you're living the dream or living the difficulty, however you want to say it. But what for you? You know, has there been a moment where you just said, "Wow, I just this is tougher than I thought it was going to be," or, you know, what for you was really your darkest moment in this on this journey?
I think in my first couple of years, I would say, you know, the problem we were trying to solve was a real problem for us. So finding talent that, we wanted to walk the talk as well. So hiring for attitude and the soft skills, and then being willing to train for the technical skills. And so, you know, a third of our team, for example, is filled with our alumni. But finding the right talent to help us grow this, building a culture here that allowed them to be innovative and autonomous and have the personal responsibility to go out and get the work done and reach out for support as needed. When you're working in a context that is very hierarchical, just in terms of our general culture, but also the corporate culture here. So folks weren't used to coming to a place and having to call everyone by their first name and being responsible for innovating on the field and not being managed by someone from the top, but being supported by someone from the bottom or from the side. Folks kind of came in wanting to know what to be told to do. And I would tell them, I said, this is all R&D. We're a big lab. I'm the chief experimenting officer. And our job is to figure out how to make this work in the most cost-effective way that actually has an impact. it's been rewarding to see the team grow from that, you know, team of doers, just go out and get the job done, to a team of learners and innovators who, while they are doing, while they're screening young people every day, while they're training them, while they're connecting them to jobs, while they're speaking to employers and signing them up, are also thinking about how we can innovate this and how we can create a methodology that other folks can replicate across the world, not just Africa. So for us, it's been really important that we realize what we're doing is a drop in the ocean in terms of the size of the problem. We work in Lagos, and Lagos alone is, you know, 20 million people, the most densely populated city. And I'd argue that a third or half of them are young people, and most of them are unemployed. And so even if we train 25,000 people by 2019, which was our original vision and goal, it's a drop in the ocean compared to the size of the problem. And so it's very important for us to create methodology that other people can replicate and get to the millions of people who need this urgently. And so that's been sort of our mission in the last few years, is really building out the system that others can deliver as well. And more recently, we've been thinking about how do you fix the problem at the system level? So if the big challenge is that everyone needs to be focused on skills rather than just credentials, then how do we get employers to start walking the talk in that way? And we're hoping that that will then influence everyone to then focus on that. So right now, employers say, I need a degree. If you don't have a degree, you're not even getting called into the first round of an interview. And that's blocking out a lot of high potential talent that have the skills, but it's just not packaged in a college education. And so how do we reframe and make employers' hiring practices more inclusive, and hopefully put ourselves out of business? Because if every employer knew how to hire for attitude, train for these soft skills, for the technical skills, then there wouldn't need to be academies out there. And if every secondary school and every primary school and every university knew that what was really important was to make people work ready and life ready, not just the academic knowledge, but really the life skills, then they would teach those skills in those schools, and people would come out of these institutions not as failures, but ready to work, demographic dividends rather than the liabilities that the government sees them as. So right now our government will say, oh, our big priority is youth unemployment. It's our biggest headache. It's our biggest problem. Young people shouldn't be a problem. They should be such an opportunity. I mean, we know of the Western nations that are struggling with an aging population and are trying to get young people and immigrants in. And we in Africa are flooded with young people, and it's seen as a ticking time bomb. And that's really the narrative we're trying to rewrite.
Yeah, you're changing the story. I appreciate that perspective. So I kind of took you to what was hardest. So let's make sure that we balance that a little bit with what's been most rewarding for you. I mean, has there been a moment where you just sort of looked around and said, wow, this thing is working. I'm making an impact here.
It's rewarding when you see, I mean, I tell people the most frustrating thing about the job is the people, but the most rewarding thing about the job is the people. So it's rewarding when you see the team of people at Wave, for example. We're now over 30 people, and we're all young. You know, I'm one of the oldest people on the team, and I'm in my early 30s. And there's just a passion and a vibrancy. We're solving very difficult problems here, but people show up every day with that commitment to this bigger mission of just helping young people reach their potential, connecting them to opportunities, and that's super rewarding. And then when you see the young people who have gone through so much to get to this step, and then they're willing to start small, and then you get a call from them a year later, and they are now a supervisor on their job, and they're calling you to hire staff, and you see that it's come full circle. Or when you meet an employer and they have gone from working out of their kitchen because they couldn't find staff and they were afraid to grow, and they now have 3 or 4 branches and outlets and are hiring 20, 30 people because they can now focus on growing their business and no longer have to worry about how do I find the right people who care about my business and want to help it grow. And you see that narrative, and I studied economics. To me, like, that's like the zen of economic development. It's just empowering people, connecting them to opportunities, creating transparency of information in the market. Where are the jobs? Where are the job seekers? Matching them according to their skills. And then you see the sort of quote-unquote invisible hand just take place. And people start to move up the ladder, and our alumni come back and say, you know, 2-3 years later, they now have experience and they want to get supervisory jobs. And people used to tell us in the beginning, oh, start in the middle management. Africa needs middle management. That's the biggest headache. And I said, if we don't build middle management from the ground up and take these people and turn them into entry level rock stars and help them support them as they become middle management, then we're leaving 40 to 50 million people behind.
Yeah.
If you just focused on middle management and just took the kids, the 7% who went to college, and put them into management roles and only focus on them, you're doing a huge disservice to the people who just weren't opportunate enough to be born on that side of opportunity. And so, that's what keeps us excited every day. And I boil it down to a simple conversation, having one conversation with a young person every day, be it on my team, be it in one of our classrooms, be it with an employer, and just getting them to think differently about whatever paradigms they have about young people and about employment and about schools and about skills. That is success to me every day. And I go to bed feeling, you know, even if I don't wake up tomorrow morning, I have changed the way someone saw something. And that's the difference that I seek to make in the world. So start very small, learn very fast, grow very big. And that's what we try to encourage our trainees to do.
Wow. I love your passion.
Thank you.
Yeah. As you think about something that you've learned on your journey that you would like to pass along to early stage social entrepreneurs, what's something that you've learned that perhaps you could pass along?
Like I just said, start small, learn fast, grow big. It's crazy. One of our team members just came up with that phrase one day when he was trying to just explain and connect the dots with the young people we work with. But it's so relevant to life and to entrepreneurship in particular. I tell people the story about how we started with $18,000 check we'd won in a business plan competition, and we rented out a space for 18 days because that's what we could afford. We couldn't afford monthly rent. We had these trainers come in per day and we would pay them per day that they trained. And then any day we couldn't afford the trainer, you know, I would run a class, or our intern or our part-time staff would run a class. And just starting small, we had 12 people in the first class, and I looked them in the eye on orientation day, and I said, you guys don't know me. You've just, you know, sort of signed up for this thing, and you're never going to get these 3 weeks of your life back, but I promise you I won't sleep well at night until I've gotten every single one of you a job. And in the end, we got 9 people a job. The other 3 found work on their own. We're still in touch with them today. And just starting small and building off of that is so important, because when you compare yourself to only where you're trying to go, it can seem very daunting. So I tell people, just sort of start with the vision, that deep dissatisfaction of what is and that clear grasp of what could be, and let that guide you every day. It's a quote of, I think it's from John Stott, but it's a guiding light for me. Like, it's just that every day you wake up and you're dissatisfied with the world, but you also want to enjoy it. That's another quote that's really fascinating. Like, you wake up in the morning and you don't know whether to enjoy the world or improve it. And it makes it hard to figure out how to spend your day. But it is, you know, I do drive home from work some days and I just have a smile on my face, not because we've achieved anything. You know, a lot of times things are going, the world is falling apart, the sky is falling, but there's just that happiness of pursuit, where you say, it's like you're building a cathedral. It may not be built in my lifetime, but you just marvel at how those people went to work for their entire lifetime, 50, 60 years, whatever it was, just knocking away at those cathedral basilicas.
How can people find Wave online or on social media?
So they can find us on our website, www.waveacademies.org. That's plural. Same with Facebook, same with Twitter, Instagram, @waveacademies. That's where to find us.
Okay. And then a call to action. Here's my question for you. People have been hanging around with you and me for the last half hour or so. What's something you would love to see them go and do as a result of this conversation?
So I coined this, or a friend of mine coined this mantra, and I have adopted it. Skills over schools, to really rewire the system and level the playing field for young people, we need to shift the conversation from schools,
from work experience to skills. Do young people have the skills and the competency to do the job? And if they do, they should be given the same opportunity to prove themselves, whether they went to college, whether they had access to as much formal education. But if you look at what everyone has the opportunity to do, whether they're an employer, they can hire more inclusively by focusing on skills over schools. Whether they are a young person or an individual, they can focus on skills and learning those skills in whatever life opportunities are presented to them beyond just the four walls of a classroom. If I tell the young people we work with, if you've lived with a family of five, then you know a thing or two about teamwork. You know how to sell. You know how to problem solve. You must know how to communicate. So thinking about learning outside of the classroom, and if it's focused on skills, then it really broadens people's horizons and changes their paradigms about where they can access these skills that can move them on the path to social mobility. If you are a skill provider or an educational institution, how do we change that conversation so that we're holding ourselves accountable for delivering the skills that young people need rather than just a certificate? If you are a government and you're thinking about how to create opportunities for young people, how do you once again rewire that education to employment system so that it's leveling the playing field for young people by focusing on the thing that's easiest for them to access when you think about work experience, when you think about networks, when you think about academic qualifications. It's the most accessible of those things is skills. If a young person is able to find a way to learn those skills, they should be given a chance.
Yeah. Well, Ms. Sun, thank you so much for joining us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much for having me, Tony.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. If you'd like the show notes for today, head over to tonyloyd.com/137. That's tonyloyd.com/137. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining us today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.